you wake in a strange room. Your clothes are foreign, and the walls are covered in objects from a different world. You don't know where or when you are, or if you're still dreaming. There are footsteps in the hall. Jumping up, you race out of the room and into the streets. You have just entered the Twilight Histories.
Today's show is by Kevin Valbanese. Kevin runs a media company called Baroque Media. He's been doing a lot of cool motion graphics lately and posting them on Twitter. If you need media for your business or project, whether video or audio or even some podcast work, Kevin's your man. Check him out at Baroque Media. And now for today's show, Rex Morris Part 3 by Kevin Valbanese. Enjoy.
You stand on a stone balcony, enjoying the light summer breeze. You can just about make out the sea from where you are. And even at this distance, the wind carries that unmistakable salty tinge to your lips. A glance down at the city streets makes you marvel at how different an animal the city of Otranto is compared to Cassiope. Where one was little more than a hamlet of goat herders to be picked clean by royal decree, the other is a military engine, nestled within the firm embrace of formidable stone walls. If you had to count, it's more than likely that soldiers would outnumber the regular citizens here. You imagine that the double walls, which run around the city, even closing off its own harbor, were inspired by the Theodosian walls of Constantinople. The number of soldiers patrolling the walls certainly makes up for their scale with respect to the capital's set. Archers peer out over the countryside from turrets, and military engineers stroll along in search of any less than perfect construction. The castle you're currently standing on is built into the walls, and over only one of two entrances into the city. Peering back into the castle, you can look right through the tower to the balcony keeping vigil over the countryside. You hear hooves, and turn your gaze to the port's gate, where Roman cavalry officers trot out and down the main street towards the castle. You spot General Phocas riding at the head of the cavalry, resplendent in the armor of a Roman high commander, and beaming with the glory of a conquering hero. As far as you're concerned, he can enjoy the moment. If not for Phocas, you might still be on Cassiope. Breathing or otherwise. Hearing the frantic pattering of feet from the depths of the castle, you imagine that Harold is about to hold court. You spare one final glance out at the sea beyond, then head inside. The high command of Harold's court assemble around a central dais, surrounding the king as he stands there in his armor, dents and punctures on full display to inspire envy and valor in his men. General Phocas approaches the dais and kneels before Harold. He offers up a sword in a decorated sheath. Harold takes the blade and unsheathes it, twirls it around, and makes a mocking swing at a suddenly startled Phocas. Everyone laughs off that last flourish, except for Phocas, who forces a nervous smile.
I knew it would be light, but this is something else entirely. Someone must have borrowed his wife's sword on the way to the battle.
Another round of laughter, with even Phocas joining in.
The sword belonged to Robert Giscard. It was found next to his body, and one other item.
A Roman soldier approaches, carrying Robert's dented helmet on a red cushion. You can just about make out the hole where Harold's axe pierced the iron.
It's not a diadem, but it is still a crown of sorts.
What am I supposed to do with that?
Robert chased Roman forces from nearly every city in Italy. Were it not for your valor, even Otranto here could have flown barbarian flags. But with his death, perhaps Italy could be restored to our dominion. Harold picks up the helmet and gives it but a moment before tossing it back to its attendant soldier.
Italy? We're lucky Otranto's port was still friendly when we sailed in. There's still no word from Pescara, and Naples hasn't made contact either. If there is a new Italian kingdom, it extends as far as the walls of Otranto.
Might I give you counsel, my king?
Do.
Before Phocas can utter a syllable, the doors of the hall open with much commotion. You slip through the crowd to get a good look. You see a familiar, if worn-out, face. Mustafa approaches the dais in the company of several Arab soldiers.
Why isn't my admiral back in Sicily, rallying the fleet?
The situation at sea was more desperate than we realized. We were attacked as soon as we departed from Corfu, and we had little time to rest after repelling the enemy, as ships from Dalmatia followed up the Venetian assault. I had to dispatch trusted men to sail for Sicily while I contained the enemy to the Adriatic.
And what about our enemies on other coasts?
I've not seen one ship staffed with Roman soldiers that wasn't one of our own. Regardless, within a few days, we will have ships patrolling the coasts from Crete to Syria.
Phocas clears his throat, drawing Harold's attention.
If you seek clear counsel, my king, then hear me. The Imperial Navy has not, and likely will not oppose us at this hour, if Mustafa speaks the truth. What are you suggesting, Phocas?
We have destroyed the enemy's land forces. I doubt Robert left sufficient men behind to defend his holdings here. So, let me take our cavalry and ride to secure the Italian countryside. We can secure gold, grain, and manpower that will serve us well if there is further war on the horizon.
Harold considers this.
My king, we must wait. Leave Venice to tend its wounds. As it is, what ships we have still at hand aren't enough to safely pursue or engage the enemy.
Mustafa stands firm in Harold's face, but the king turns his gaze once more to Phocas.
Our enemies are on the run. If they had the strength to oppose us, we would still be in battle at this moment.
Harold places a meaty hand on Phocas's shoulder.
Take your horses and ride. Turn what cities you can, and if the enemy is weak in number, smash them.
Phocas doesn't wait for anyone else to chime in. He bows out, leading several of his cavalry officers with him.
What of that, Mustafa? What say you about Phocas' cavalry raid?
His horses are no good to us on the sea. Let him ride. But I beg you, do not attack Venice. If you can crush them, then what? Will you turn and throw yourself against the walls of Constantinopolis if the Emperor condemns you?
We will settle that after Venice is ash.
Mustafa bows to Harold, and with that, Harold raises his arms, earning cheers from the men. Mustafa bows out, and you follow him, leaving Harold and his bloodthirsty companions to whip themselves into a frenzy. Waves of men surge across the harbor of Otranto,
marching in tight formation, loading supplies onto ships, and bidding farewell to friends and family alike. You and Mustafa push your way through the crowd, and arriving in front of the capital ship, you can't stop yourself from making an awkward observation. Mustafa, where are all the ships? At most, you count about 10 dromons of Mustafa's modified design, and perhaps 30 traditional Viking longboats. Mustafa places his hand to his forehead and lets out a deep sigh.
I told the king that we are not fit to pursue the enemy. What ships I could manage are of the old Varangian design. Thankfully, Harald's northerners come to Sicily in their boats, and the royal decree places those boats at the king's disposal. But they are designed for navigating rivers, not fighting at sea.
Well, maybe the king will see reason once he arrives. Mustafa just shakes his head and steps onto the capital ship. As do you. Arriving on the deck, you and Mustafa are immediately swarmed by a group of Arab soldiers, dressed and armed in a curious fashion. You take note of the extremely sparse armor and the multiple harnesses wrapped around the soldiers' bodies, all sporting multiple sheathed daggers, a quiver full of arrows, and a grappling hook. The men, all to a number, salute Mustafa.
Friends of yours?
More like brothers. These men are from Carthage, and I've never met a man who fights at sea with greater skill or valor than these men. We are fortunate that at least a few from my old company were here in Otranto. We may not crush the enemy fleet, but with these men at our side, we needn't fear for our own ship, at least.
I expect more than that from my admiral.
A familiar voice cuts through the chaos of the harbor. Harald and a corps of Varangians approach the ship, all decked out in their lighter, seafaring armor. Harald rests his signature double-headed axe on his shoulder. Mustafa and the Arab soldiers bow to Harald. The Viking king makes little of it, then turns to you.
Get this one ready. For a man used to fine silks, he's not a terrible soldier.
Without another word, Harald and his men board the ship. Mustafa claps a hand on your shoulder and looks at you, incredulous.
What?
It got a little hairy on Corfu.
It was either pick up a sword or take one through the chest.
Mustafa says nothing, but he can't help himself for long and cracks a smile. You share a laugh, his men joining in. The laughter doesn't last long, however, as Mustafa's face betrays severe concern. You want to say something, but he's too deep in his thoughts. Mustafa disembarks from the ship and shoves his way through the crowd of soldiers. He finds a military engineer among the crowd and trades a few words with him, gesturing at the longboats docked in the harbor. You wonder what they're talking about. Whatever it is, the conversation doesn't last long. Somehow, the engineer looks more concerned than Mustafa, shaking his head and waving his arms. But Mustafa insists, gesturing at the capital ship, perhaps at Harald. Finally, the military engineer relents. He bows and runs off. Mustafa returns to the ship.
Everything all right?
Oh, yes. Just a few last-minute arrangements. Speaking of which, let's get you ready for your first real fight at sea.
The Adriatic Sea is quiet, with barely a ripple disturbing the surface of the water. Harald's fleet drifts ahead, the sails sagging without the wind, and the oars raised as the sailors take a much-needed break. The darkness is striking. And there's nothing quite like this back in your time, where cities never sleep, and you're always pestered by the flickering light of a screen or holographic display. Even back on land, in this time, you had the accompaniment of a fire. But not here. Here, only the stars save you from total darkness. And even then, their distant light barely gives shape to anything more than 20 feet in front of you. The moon, new as it is, offers no assistance. You stand next to Mustafa, pulling your cloak around the light tunic and leather armor he gave you earlier. You startle a little as the rowers begin again. Mustafa laughs as he too pulls his cloak around his shoulders. Straining your eyes, you can just about make out Harold as he paces up and down the deck, his axe still resting on his shoulder. He hasn't stopped since we passed Termoli.
Most likely, he's thinking about when he'll take the Doge's head.
You think he'd do it? I can't imagine the Doge of Venice picking up a sword and fighting like Robert did.
If we manage to get past the Venetian fleet, then anything is possible. And if Harold tastes blood, he'll make it so. I give the king this. He is not one for half measures.
Mustafa steps down onto the main deck of the ship, and you follow him. The two of you walk past Harold, not sparing a word for the king. You walk along the deck and marvel at how even now the sailors continue to row, moving their thick arms forward and backward. They're all solemn, and you're astounded at how they row in near perfect unison without the aid of a drum. The two of you reach the bow of the ship, where you find the Carthaginian contingent from earlier. They're all preparing their weapons, testing bowstrings, swinging short swords and daggers, and in a few cases, spinning grappling hooks tied to the end of thick ropes. Mustafa takes a grappling hook from one of the men and holds it up to your face.
This won us the Battle of the Nile. When the Caliph's ships came to meet us, we drew them in and boarded them. Axes, knives, and the like made short work of the ship's crew.
Mustafa hands the grappling hook back to the soldier, and then he takes a bow from another.
The engagement always begins with arrow fire. We aim to disrupt the rowers and leave the ship unable to navigate properly. Then we close in and board. Our goal is always to capture a ship, rather than sink it. Enemy ships can be added to our fleet, or made into a nasty surprise at a later time.
But you have Greek fire. Why not just blast them with that all day long?
Everyone is wise to this tactic by now, and it carries significant risk. The flames can easily spread to our own ships because they continue to burn on the water. We used it against the Venetians last time to give us an easy escape, but I would not lead with it otherwise. Not like that, anyway.
And what's the plan this time?
It is as I said. We'll capture what we can and turn their ships against them.
Oh, I meant for me.
Are you so desperate to seek battle? Last time I saw you, you were begging for an easy escape.
How can I write a true account of Harold and his world if I don't experience it up close? How could I find the words to describe the din of battle? Or the bravery of your men. I'd still rather not get cut to pieces, but then I'd like to think I'm in good hands anyway.
Mustafa smiles. He hands you the bow. One of the soldiers hands you a quiver full of arrows.
I hope you take aim as well as you speak.
The men all burst into laughter, and you really can't help but join them. The sun rises over the waters of the Adriatic, and with it brings the first glimpses of the day's defining business. Far off in the distance, several ships catch the morning rays, unfurling their sails, greeting the rising sun with the skyward roar of St. Mark's winged lion. You stand with Harold, Mustafa, and the crack Arab soldiers at the bow of the ship. Everyone looks ahead, eyes darting from left to right to try and count the entirety of the enemy fleet. If you were to hazard a guess, you could only say hundreds. And what ships they are. Unlike Harold's fleet, which is almost exclusively composed of modified dromons and Viking longboats, the enemy fleet is varied, composed of galleys, several dromons of their own, and a few heavy warships. You notice a good chunk of the enemy ships sport towers where archers are perched high above the crew. The enemy fleet is spread wide, but not terribly deep, preferring to block any further advance up either coast. If the ships could speak, they would all be screaming, "You shall not pass." Mustafa turns to assess the size of Harold's fleet, and since he doesn't linger on the site for long, you wonder if he's concerned at all.
"They are many times our number, and they are in a strong position. This battle will cost us many ships and lives, regardless of who wins."
"My men are ready to die. If we don't achieve victory, then perhaps the old gods will welcome us into Valhalla."
Harold pauses, leans forward, spotting a small Venetian ship approaching.
"Ah, perhaps they are coming to surrender."
Harold marches over to the east side of the ship and signals to one of the nearby longboats to approach. Mustafa gestures for you to join him. Minutes later, you settle into the longship as its Varangian crew row with great haste, bringing you within arrow range of the enemy ship. Harold, unconcerned, stands at the bow of the ship as if to offer himself up to the enemy. The Venetians are all armed, save for one occupant of their ship, who sits in a beautiful wool robe and wears a matching cap. You recognize him as Enrico Capello, the ambassador to Harold's court.
"Come to beg my forgiveness."
"I have come to put an end to this business."
Enrico doesn't even stand to greet Harold as the two ships pull up beside each other.
"The Doge commends you. Your ferocity has not been exaggerated. But you are before the world's greatest fleet, and your tenacity will only get you sunk."
"Does the Doge realize that your treachery has done nothing to help the trouble you claim we've put you in? Or is he content to risk his neck on the promise of easy Roman gold?"
"The Doge and the Emperor both seek peace and unity for all loyal servants of the Empire. But your barbarity threatens us all. If you do not abandon all your territories along this sea and send an indemnity to the Muslim rulers you have offended, then we will deprive you of your kingdom and send you to the capital in chains."
"There's no need for terms. I knew what Miklagard's terms were the moment your ships first sailed against us. If there is to be peace in the Empire, it will be after it has bled of Venetian greed and Roman fear."
Harold signals for the longship to turn around. The crew waste no time putting distance between you and the Venetian ship. You look at Mustafa, who has his head hung low. His lips move in silent prayer, reciting verses from the Quran. Place a hand on his shoulder, and when he raises his eyes to meet yours, you offer up a few words. If he wills it, let it be so. You check your sword one more time before placing it back in its sheath. You pull the straps on your leather armor tight and shake your body, hoping to shed the anxiety which is currently smothering you. Sure, you fought last time, when you had to. But now, you've consigned yourself to this, to all the ways you could give up your ghost. You think about the Greek fire contained below deck, the arrows and spears your enemy are carrying, and the deep waters of the Adriatic below. Mustafa, on the other hand, is the definition of stoic. He stands with his men, dressed in the armor of an admiral. Mustafa's leather armor is stitched with arabesque designs and depictions of fierce sea monsters bursting from beneath the waves. You spot Harold as he climbs down onto a waiting Viking longboat, still holding onto that giant axe of his, and shortly surrounded by the roughest-looking Varangians you've seen yet, and a few of Mustafa's elite Arab soldiers. The king turns and looks over his shoulder at Mustafa.
My king, there is no need for this. We need you here to command the battle.
I won't ask my men to take a risk that I wouldn't. Besides, if this doesn't work exactly as planned, we're all dead anyway.
And with that, Harold nods to his admiral and takes up his position at the head of the longboat. Taking a shield from one of his comrades, Harold raises his axe skyward and lets out a beastly scream. Mustafa gives a signal, and a soldier raises a war horn to his lips. The sound booms out, and it immediately sends every man to their post. The drummers begin, the rowers follow, and the soldiers prepare themselves. You run to the bow of the deck to join Mustafa's Arab soldiers. You pick up a bow and quiver full of arrows, and you pray that the worst thing you do is hit yourself with a string. The Viking longboats all advance, carrying their mixed crews of axe-wielding Varangians, Roman archers, and Arab marines. You notice distinct shapes covered with heavy cloths tucked away at the head of every longboat. And there's little time to think on those curious shapes as a cauldron is brought up and lit. Several sailors rush to secure the cauldron to the deck, running chains through loops on the cauldron's body and fastening it to the deck of the ship. The enemy ships move first. Several heavy galleys advance, heading straight for the capital ship. Mustafa signals two flag bearers who run to either side of the ship and signal to the ships adjacent to yours. He watches flag bearers on those ships repeat the process, sending a wave of signals outward to either end of the fleet. The longboats advance at a comfortable clip ahead of the capital ship and the few dromans on your side. It's not long before the crew of the longboats are exchanging arrow fire with their Venetian foes. And in time, you see arrows falling into the water just ahead of the capital ship. Soon after, they're fixing themselves into the bow of the ship. The Arab soldiers all ready their arrows and unleash on the Venetians before the enemy can fire again. You struggle to pull back on the bowstring, but you eventually get off a shot. You watch as your arrow crashes into the water, just short of the incoming Venetian ship. You don't have the time to be embarrassed,
as you're pulled to the deck to avoid the incoming enemy fire. An arrow buries itself in the wood, inches from your feet. The Arab soldiers get up again and return fire, ducking every time their bows are empty, immediately knocking a new arrow to them in preparation for the next round. You do likewise, and pop up to fire, again, not hitting anything living, although you do manage to at least hit one of the enemy ships. You rise up and fire again, this time clipping a Venetian sailor on a Droman some distance away. You look down at the longboats and see some of the Arab marines hurling grappling hooks up and onto the enemy ships, while others toss grappling hooks to their comrades on the other longboats. Harold orders his Varangians to seize the ropes attached to the grappling hooks and pull themselves onto the enemy ships. From the capital ship, you continue to fire at the enemy, giving the Varangians cover as they pull themselves onto the decks of the enemy galleys.
Cease arrow fire.
Mustafa's orders are followed up by furious flag waving. Within seconds, arrow fire ceases across the Allied ships.
It's in their hands now.
Looking out across the water, you see Harold and his Varangians as they finish capturing an enemy ship. They throw men overboard and cut down everyone else. Looking further out in either direction, you see the same battle taking place as far as the eye can see. It's a brutal, bloody mess. Archers aside, the Venetians have few real soldiers on hand, save for a few Dalmatian infantrymen, all fighting desperately to drive back the enemy. And as cornered men, they do fight ferociously, inflicting severe casualties on the enemy before being cut down themselves. The bulk of the Venetian fleet cease their advance, unable to pass their own ships as Harold's soldiers capture and kill their crews. They instead hold their position, drawing up their sails. Their archers pepper Harold's forces, making the business of occupying the ships even more difficult.
Mustafa, what are we doing here? We need to send reinforcements. We need to do something.
Not yet. Not until we've captured the entirety of their front line.
Not long after saying that, the signal comes from the ship Harold is standing on. An Arab soldier waves a flag at the capital ship. One of the soldiers near you signals back at his comrade. More grappling hooks are thrown from every occupied ship onto the others, and some onto those still controlled by the enemy. Meanwhile, men pass up the covered bundles from the longboats, using baskets and more grappling hooks.
Arrows to the fire.
The order goes out, the signal after it. All across the Allied Dromans, soldiers wrap loose bits of cloth around their arrows and touch them to the fire. Suddenly, Mustafa's plan becomes all too obvious to you. And it's confirmed by a desperate scramble from Harold and his men to evacuate the captured ships. Some men rappel down the sides of the ships, while others just throw themselves into the water, trying to land near one of the longboats.
Loose!
Burning arrows fly like a hailstorm out of hell. They land on the decks of the enemy ships and set tiny fires. Some of these fires spread faster than others, and one gets really out of hand when a tongue of fire touches one of the covered bundles. There's an explosion which racks the deck of that particular ship, sending searing shards of clay out in every direction and casting a familiar burning liquid everywhere. In almost no time at all, the captured Venetian ships are consumed in fire, either when one of these Greek fire surprises explodes, or when the flames navigate the ropes and jump to the other ships.
Take us back. Make haste.
Mustafa gives the order. The signal goes out, and the men begin to row, sending the ships backward, slowly,
Mustafa, you can't abandon those men out on the water.
I pray they will survive the ordeal. But if they must give their lives, so be it. For peace, I will give anything.
Mustafa is firm. You run to the bow of the ship and look desperately out at the longboats, struggling to escape from the inferno. Some of the longboats burn, sending men into the water. Others have already retreated back to a safe distance. But none that you can see are carrying Harold. You panic, wondering what will become of you and Mustafa if the king has perished because of Mustafa's decisions. Terrified at the prospect, you grab a grappling hook from one of the Arab marines nearby and look out past the bow of the ship, searching desperately for any sign of Harold. You see Harold break the surface of the water at quite some distance from any of the nearby ships. You hurl the grappling hook in Harold's direction, but it falls short, crashing into the sea. You pull on the rope, drawing the grappling hook back up from the water. You build up as much momentum as you can, and you hurl the grappling hook again, sending it high up and gliding out over the sea. The hook lands close enough to Harold, nearly hitting the king in the head as it does. Harold grabs hold of the rope and begins to pull himself toward you. Struggling to hold your footing, you nearly fall into the water. Two soldiers rush to your aid and help you pull Harold up and back onto the capital ship. Harold wrings seawater from his hair and his nose. He turns and looks back at the growing wall of fire and smoke separating the two fleets. He grunts and groans, clutching his fists tight. Mustafa approaches the king, stoic and silent. He bows.
Their fleet remains strong. You've done nothing now but prolong the battle, Mustafa.
Enough of their forces managed to escape, yes. I did what I could. But perhaps they will no longer have the will to oppose you.
I wanted them destroyed. If one Venetian ship remains, they will always sail against us.
Or they could be brought into our fleet. Would it not be better to put Venetian sailors and their ships to our own use? Give them their lives, and they will give you their service.
We are so close. If we can wait out the flames.
Mustafa touches a hand to his forehead, allowing himself only that subtle hint of frustration. He then gestures out to the burning mast before the fleet.
As you like, my king. We must indeed wait for the flames to die down, or risk our own ships. We can drop our anchors, or perhaps we can return to a safe port. Tell me what you want, and it shall be done.
Harold crosses his arms. He paces about, muttering curses under his breath. Finally, he faces Mustafa and gives his answer.
Drop the anchors.
You stand at the bow of the capital ship, looking out over the harbor of the medieval world's first maritime city. At least, in your timeline. And what a city it is. You can make out where several canals empty out into the sea, and you take in the red-bricked roofs and dome ceilings of the major churches. But you can also see the Venetian fleet arrayed in front of the city, prepared to make a desperate last stand, backed up by catapults and thousands of men-at-arms. A lone boat ventures forth from among the Venetian ranks. Mustafa joins you at the bow, and you watch as Harold rides out on a fresh longboat to meet the enemy envoy. The two boats pull up next to each other, not far from the capital ship. You watch as Enrico takes a deep bow before offering a few words up to Harold. Unlike before, Enrico's tone is meek, modest, almost inaudible. He speaks, keeping his head bowed low. After a bit of back and forth, and several firm gestures from Harold towards the city, Enrico nods. Reaching into his cloak, Enrico pulls out a scroll with a bright red ribbon and a solid gold seal hanging from it. Harold takes the scroll and holds up the gold seal. He fixes his eyes on the seal and eventually rips it from the scroll and opens the document. He reads for only a moment, then rips the scroll to shreds. He stretches one of his meaty arms out towards Venice, and in response, Enrico bows, then picks up a flag and waves it toward the shore. In response, large white banners are unrolled from the roofs of Venice. The men aboard Harold's ships applaud, hooting, beating their chests, pounding on the rowing drums, clanging axes and spears and anything else against shields and the masts of their ships. But Mustafa remains silent. He bows his head, eyes closed, and mutters a prayer to himself. You allow Mustafa a moment after he's finished his recitation. Then you lean in and shout over the noise. What do you think was written on that scroll?
I believe that is the Emperor's seal. Whatever was written, it changes nothing. Venice, it would appear, is ours. But now, it would be a long time before we anchor our ships in Sicilian harbors again.
Meaning what exactly?
Meaning, you may see your home sooner than expected.
What you just heard was the conclusion of Rex Morris by Kevin Valbonesi. If you enjoyed this show, why not check out the members area, where you'll find 43 other shows only available when you pick up a membership. A quick note for current members, part 8 of The Black Scourge has been posted. There was a slight delay getting it out, and you can blame Mother's Day or me for bad timing, but it is posted and ready for you to download. I'm currently polishing up the script for the next installment of Blue Dragons for members. It's really fun to write. You know the film genre, Swords and Sandals? Ben-Hur, 300, Hercules, that kind of film. Well, this is what I'm calling Lasers and Sandals. Or probably more appropriately, a high-caliber futuristic flare gun and a Conan the Barbarian loincloth. Throw in a band of bloodthirsty monkeys and some terraforming dragons, or are they aliens? What the heck are they? Well, we don't know yet, but it's a lot of fun. If you go to the members area now, you'll find part one of Blue Dragons, which is a 43-minute show. Part two is in the works. Go to twilighthistories.com and click on the page called Members to join the fun. I'm Jordan Harbour. Thanks for listening to the Twilight Histories. Until next time, take care.